Oh, good evening, everybody. We are now live on our regular Thursday stream. I've put it in the chat. I always get people saying that they can't get the stream to start sometimes. If you're watching this on the VOD, I know it's no use to people who can't get it to start, but generally as we start, you should refresh because Google can take up to 5 minutes to actually get you into the live thing. So that's always something I encourage. Before I start, there's always the normal stuff that we do. The best way to donate to us is through Streamlabs. You will get your donation read. We monitor it via Streamlabs because Google's useless. We do still have super chats available
Yeah,
as
to
well
do
as
that, I will
memberships.
say, I believe someone has either given us a super chat or some super sticker thing before the stream,
Yes.
and we can see the revenue is there, but we can't see what you've actually written.
The message never actually came up. I monitor the chat before the stream starts. So, sorry, whoever has donated, I think it's probably about $5, judging by the amount there. If you donate $5 before the stream,
It's not $5 anymore. I suppose when you take off the cut, yes. Hey, if anything, this means Americans and Canadians giving us money on YouTube's worth more now.
It is. That's why I said it was $5 because it's like £4.65, which is about what it would be if it was $5. But yes, Google is bad at serving us those. But just doing normal YouTube-y stuff, before we start. Like I said,
I
it.
will say it looks like monetization. Oh no, it says it's on, but error loading.
Oop.
I don't know. We can, but well, no, it seems to have fixed itself just now. It's just something I saw on the back end.
That might just be Google systems going wiggy. We saw it as we tried to start. You had trouble connecting, but yeah, we do try and make sure we read everything though. So super chats, memberships, and Streamlabs donations are the best way. We are also we'll probably show this at the end as well. We're still running our the sales for our Nomos event. If
Of
you are
course.
in the UK and you're able to be in London on the 29th of October, we are running an event. We've already announced essentially all the speakers, but I'm going to try and get a dedicated interview with Panama Hat probably next week, if we can, because we've got Academic Agent speaking, we've got Millennial Woe speaking. His interview is premiering tomorrow, and I'll be sending out all the announcement stuff for that and updating the website for all that tomorrow as well. We've just got kind of the pre thing up. So I'll probably link that at the end if people want to bookmark it or something, or just jot it down, because we've got my interview with Millennial Woes, just for his little speaker interview for the Nomos thing. But yeah, lots of stuff going on, pretty exciting. You put out a video on Carlisle
I
yesterday.
did, yes. It was from my essay from Carlisle Day last year that was originally up on the Prax Archie website, I believe.
All right, has that been put on our Substack before?
No, it hasn't, because it was, I think I wrote it specifically for them,
Ah,
as part
okay.
of launching that site, which was all sort of done on the same day. It was a shame it doesn't get used as much anymore, but it's just one of those things. Unless you set out to write something for a specific group of people, you end up just doing it for yourself because you're obviously trying to create publicity around your own stuff. So it's, I don't know. Maybe it can be revived in some way, shape, or form in future, but we'll see.
Good evening, everyone. I see you all saying hello in chat. So thank you guys for coming. Like I said, it takes a while for people to filter in. That's why we kind of do the pre-streamy stuff, which is a little bit more for the VOD, as they say, as the Twitch people say.
Oh
But
no, it's I will once again say thank you to the people who show up for the streams, who are channel members, who, as we mentioned earlier on, donate either via Streamlabs or Super Chats or whatnot. I also notice more and more people doing like a plus one for the algorithm gods in the
Yes,
comments. So
those are always good.
the more of those the better, please.
Yes, we do have a Telegram. If you guys want to join our Telegram, that's actually the best way to keep up to date with. We use that as almost like a what we would a Twitter feed, because neither of us are really on Twitter anymore. I know you've
No.
got an account to keep up with certain DM groups, but I'm not on Twitter at all. I don't even have a Smurf account or a private account there. I just don't use Twitter. I'll occasionally log into one of my suspended accounts to double check what is and isn't trending, so I know what the normosphere is talking about. But that's more of a monitoring the trends than anything for these kind of streams. I maybe log in twice a week to double check a couple of things. So that is the best place to get us.
Well, since we're on a bit of a tight schedule this evening, shall we get
Yeah, I was
things
going to say,
rolling?
We've done our little intro, but yes,
Oh,
as you
pardon me.
said, do interact with the video, do you know, do all the YouTubey things, like subscribe, blah blah blah, because otherwise you just won't see the content. Just the way YouTube does stuff. They will, if you watch a video but don't interact with it, they'll basically think that that video has no impact on you, so they won't serve you content like that anymore, which is why YouTube's full of like weird rage bait. But anyway, let's get into it straight away, because we're doing, it's kind of a news catch up, but it has an overarching theme in that all of these stories demonstrates in one way or another the power of hegemony and the naked power of a lot of the establishment power right now. And it's amazing that we have all of these disparate stories that are kind of in the headlines. Some of them are slightly older, some of them are slightly newer. They've all taken place really in the last month, or become more relevant in the last month. But they all have this common theme, which is that they are demonstrations of outward establishment power in some way or another. So I think this is
Well,
it's a good kind of smattering of things to go through to demonstrate that point.
yeah, I think what was it on? I don't know if they give the day here exactly, but I think it was either Monday or Tuesday. I know it was September 15th, sorry, so it was nearly 2 weeks ago now, that PayPal had suspended the account for the Free Speech Union. And not only Parliament now come out, and Jacob Rees-Mogg, remember when we all used to be about Mogmentum and all that kind of stuff?
God, no.
He's not only come out and defended free speech, he's also come out and basically given PayPal a telling, which is quite strange. And as you say, it's almost kind of revealing of the mask off nature of what's going on here, where the government's basically slapping PayPal on the wrist because it's like, no, you've stepped onto one of the people who's actually inside the Overton window, and he,
Yes.
we keep him on side, even though he's maybe ineffectual as an actor himself. Our relation to him makes us look like the good guys, at least to some extent.
Of course, it's about like the fake dialectic as well. You being a dissident in quotes becomes about defending someone like Toby Young and the Free Speech Union, rather than doing something that would actually be effective. Some people may be surprised by our criticism and our disdain in many ways for Toby Young and the Free Speech Union, but that will become clear as we go through what they do, who they are, and what their
Oh yeah, the
values are, in quotes.
because this is the thing as well. It's the a second letter signed by 41 MPs and peers was sent to Mel Stride, the chairman of the Treasury Secretary Committee, on Monday, calling for an investigation and accusing PayPal of issuing private economic sanctions against groups it disagrees with. Have the Tory party not just engaged in a 6 month long campaign sanctioning any private entity from Russia that they can? But of course, you just accuse your enemies of what you're doing. Mr. Rees-Mogg previously said PayPal should not engage in cancel culture. Brr. But yeah, there's really not much of substance in the Telegraph piece. It's just the Telegraph being the Telegraph, really, at the end of the day.
Yes.
And then Toby Young himself wrote a short piece in The Spectator about it. God, I realize the text for this has all gone a mess. What the hell's happened to this article?
Oh no, that's just the image that's not served.
Ah,
The
right.
text is fine.
Ah.
Oh no, it isn't. You're right, it's gone all fucky. Ah well.
This is basically him saying the same thing. He's like, oh, well, forgive me for I don't jump for joy since PayPal dropped a bombshell on 15th of September. I've been desperately trying to save the Daily Skeptic and the Free Speech Union from going under.
The Daily Skeptic.
Inconvenience doesn't begin to describe what I've been through. About a quarter of the regular donations people were making to the Daily Skeptic were being made via PayPal. Well, so you make
The
money out of
Daily
the online
Skeptic.
activism you do, Toby Young, because a whole lot of us don't. About a third of the Free Speech Union's members were paying the recurring memberships dues using PayPal. Blah, blah, blah. We've had to write all of these people. It's like, buh, buh, woe is me. I run an ex you know a relatively successful sort of almost like Quango at this point, and PayPal decided they don't like me, and then the government came out and defended me in front of PayPal, and that's not good enough. And no mention, of
They
course, to the whether or not we think they are some of them legitimate actors or not. There are dozens of people in the UK sort of quote-unquote far-right scene who have been silenced by PayPal, who have had their bank accounts shut down.
Well, what this does is it means that Jacob Rees-Mogg not speaking out is a precedent.
Yes.
It's about picking winners. Very much so, the Free Speech Union has been picked as a winner, whereas hundreds really of other individuals and organizations have been picked as losers.
Mm.
And it's a very much about drawing a line about who is and isn't acceptable. And the very fact that the Free Speech Union is acceptable by the mainstream Tory party should cause you to be suspicious of it. But you should play that. There's a video.
As I was going to say, there are two reasons primarily for the mainstream support of Toby Young. We will start off, hopefully this isn't too loud. God, is that horrible young guy from the Sun Politics. Sorry, let me try and turn this up a little bit. This discussion, I believe, is about
my union yet.
Tommy Robinson. Sorry, it's just really bloody quiet. Tommy Robinson being involved in the Free Speech Union. And he basically says, well, he's not asked or he's not applied for it. But if he does, he would have to sign our charter.
I think that
would
be, again, a decision.
Just let it play,
if
you can get it loud enough.
The advisory council, rather than a decision for me. But I would say that he's welcome to become a member of the union. We have a statement of values, and we encourage our members not to criticise people in the course of making an argument for their membership of various groups. So not to criticise them because they're a member of a particular ethnic group or a particular religious group, or because they happen to be a woman, or even because they happen to be a man. Provided he'd be willing to sign up to that statement.
I mean, that's essentially the crux of it there. He's saying, don't be a big, bad, nasty racist. Just be just be a normal conservative and engage in civic nationalism, and don't even begin to denigrate the fact that other cultures, peoples or religions may or may not be inferior in some sense or another. Which, in and of itself, is enough for me to think, this person is not my friend.
But they then you go to... They are unserious.
Then you go to the statement of values, which beforehand, I will give you a bonus third reason why Toby Young isn't your friend, because his uncle was part of the Fabian Society and wrote a book against meritocracy in the early 1900s, I believe. But I'll start with the sort of last few sentences in their statement of values on the Free Speech Union website. We believe that free speech is currently under assault across the Anglosphere, particularly in those areas where it matters most, such as schools, universities, the arts, the entertainment industry, blah, blah, blah. Essentially making a rearguard action for, you know, mass media, mass education, and the usual outlets that you would normally have disdain for, but once they, you know, emblazon themselves with patriotism, they are now acceptable for some reason. But it gets worse, because he goes on to say that, you know, we expect our members not to restrict others' freedom of speech. So this is, you know, no, you're not allowed to engage in Machiavellian sort of asymmetric politics, the way that politics actually is. So this is a group set up to defend the Overton window of speech in a sense whereby it can't then, you know, the leftist speech that's already defended by the institutions and the government and the powers that be, they have the power to silence us. But even the institutions who are there to protect us will not let us silence our enemies.
No,
it continues on.
Well, it's the fact that as well in the interview in the clip there, he says about the statement of values and you're supposed to, he said not criticise others, which is a bizarre, maybe he misspoke, but it's a bizarre way of phrasing it.
Just one last sentence here as well. And we hope that when engaging in discussions and disagreements, they keep faith with the spirit of the Enlightenment and use reason and evidence to prosecute their case, rather than engaging in ad hominem or seeking to silence opponents through harassment or intimidation. You know, someone in chat said that, you know, it's containment. I think it's even more than that. It's like political castration.
But it's defining the free speech as the liberal, you know, the market, liberal marketplace of ideas. It's I don't know. The Daily Skeptic is funny because it's exactly what it sounds like. This is like 2015 YouTube writ large.
Well, I think the Daily Skeptic was originally a COVID thing, but, and again, to tie into this idea of schools and universities and mass media, their COVID skepticism came from a position that, oh, but we need to reopen the schools. We need to reopen the universities. You know, it wasn't, let's, you know, clear them out, shall we say, for doing what they've done to us. It's let's make amends. Let's make peace with the elites and what they've done, as long as they give us back our propaganda institutions.
It's what I've described as like, it's the haggling. It's the COVID haggling.
Mm.
A lot of what I saw from that side of things and a lot of the anti-lockdown movement was very arguing with the boxcar doors.
Yes.
Like in an extreme way. It's they're trying to make a medical argument in a situation where it is purely about compliance.
Mm.
As I keep telling people, it's like there's no point making a medical argument really about any of this. It's not a medical issue. It's not a medical debate, and it never has been.
It almost feels deliberate when at the bottom it's like, oh, as George Orwell put it, if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. Well, Toby Jung doesn't want to hear the N-word, but we should all be able to shout at him, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
why would he be so Orwellian as to ban us from saying racial slurs? Tyrant.
It's so self-defeating, and I think I've seen this clip before. I was always skeptical of the Free Speech Union people, because I knew that they had basically, they've said other things. This is just an example we could find in the like in the kind of the 10 minutes before the stream.
Yeah.
There have been other instances in which Toby Young has explicitly come out and said that the Free Speech Union should not be and is not a quote-unquote tool of the far right, and he doesn't believe that the what he would consider the authoritarian right has any right to hijack it, in quotes, or to use it as a tool to defend. I'm sure he's used the word hate speech in the past as well, so that's
probably, it wouldn't surprise me, but that's something maybe for a greater investigation, but I shall keep things moving as we get onto another perfect example of kayfabe.
Well, I would like to head this one because this Financial Times article is perfect. It's what we're saying from the other direction, like completely. It's so good from this direction because, first of all, it's a Financial Times telling a confused kind of. The Financial Times is really the paper of record for the technocrat class.
Mm.
It is the publication for middle managers who think they're important and think that they understand the financial sector. And it's for people who want to sit there and feel smart rather than The Guardian, which is for people who want to sit there and feel smug. One's related to the other. But
yes.
This is the Financial Times based thing. Giorgia Meloni's victory merits concern, but not panic. It's been like, well, be worried, but it's not time to panic yet. Italy's economy and politics will constrain its probable new prime minister. It's just, there's so much here.
That's basically an admittance that our paused institutions that we have put in this country through avenues like the American Empire, the EU, will essentially make it impossible for, you know, whatever you think of Giorgia Meloni, they will not, like Trump was, be able to actually make any radical change because all the institutions are basically like lined up against them. I forget the fact that Silvio Berlusconi's still around.
Yes, he is. Berlusconi's still knocking around. He's still very active and influential in Italian politics. He's a great survivor. They could not get rid of him.
He's still bunga bunga and up, I presume.
He's still got the big bunga bunga, yes. He must go through Viagra like a hungry dog goes through.
I reckon he doesn't need any. It's all that good olive oil and red wine.
He's just got that med diet.
I've got a virulent Italian stallion.
He's 25 from the waist down.
Nah, he's like a, I see, he's like an 18-year-old.
Yeah, a despondent Italian electorate on a record, or they have to put this jab in, on a record low turnout, so it's not legitimate anyway, has once more chosen change. Both, again, it's this cycle of what happens is Italy, back in 2011 and 2012, for those who don't know, ended up with a purely technocratic EU-imposed government who would come in and arrange the tranches of bailouts in the Greek style of the Italian economy. And from that point on, the Italian, all Italian policy was on rails, and it was rails that were laid down by Brussels. And this is really them saying, don't worry, guys, we have gimped Italian domestic power so much that even someone we are selling to you as a literal Nazi can't do anything about it. But the very reason that propelled the party with roots in the neo-fascist movement to the mainstream, a stagnant economy and a political system where little has changed in 20 years, no matter who is in power, should constrain Meloni. I mean, read that article, read that opening paragraph, and they're like, look, guys, Italy has horrible stagnation that the people there hate to the degree that they keep voting for ever more outwardly dissident parties. But nothing will change. This stagnation and this complete like lockdown, this prison, essentially, that is Italian politics, is impenetrable because of what we've done. And here's why that's a good thing. In any other context, this would be seen as absolutely abhorrent that this would be happening.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the sec. You know, there are certainly reasons to worry about Meloni, whose coalition includes the League led by Matteo Salvini, Italy's former hard right frontman, and Forza Italia, whose Silvio Berlusconi has shrugged off years worth of legal woes to emerge as a kingmaker. Their coalition captured 44% of the vote in Sunday's general election, with Meloni poised to become Italy's first female prime minister. Her strident rhetoric chimes with a worrying right-wing lurch about the EU, which Brussels will have to contend with as it tries to promote and even enforce the rule of law across the bloc.
That's such a loaded sentence. It's like Brussels is going to go out there to these sacred democratically elected governments in the liberal framework and essentially tell them what is and isn't the rule of law. The rule of law is no longer the purview of individual nation states.
Yeah, and it's like it gets even worse here. The sheer size of the economic challenge that the new government must meet is another reason to fret. Who gave them that economic challenge? Who kicked the can down the road for nearly two decades that gave them this situation? Totally wasn't EU advisors and technocrats that the FT would happily agree with.
Yeah, it says, despite efforts, they talk about the economic woes, and they say, despite efforts of outgoing Prime Minister Mario Draghi, because he was the technocrat, the arch technocrat, who they have these periods of like populist government and technocrat government in cycles. And I think after this, line up with another technocrat government, because I don't think Meloni, honestly, is going to be allowed any elbow room as this lays out. Yet Meloni, far less credible than her predecessor, must also manage soaring inflation and rising interest rates that spell out a cost of living crisis. Well, it's been imposed all over the block. That's the block's default.
I will say, I've just noticed this is quite a sizable article. Well, no, it's not. It's just the page is fucking huge because it's
the page is long. It's quite a short one. That's why I want to read it verbatim.
I don't know if they have any mention of it, but I have seen numerous clips floating around on Telegram of Meloni. She is not against immigration. She's pro the vaccine and is only very surface level critical of lockdown and the ongoing events of the last 2 years. So for them to even to be able to play up this idea that she's like some renegade or rebel, it's completely laughable.
Yes. By the way, I have seen your donations there, Glowy, a serial donator. I'll be reading those after we finish this article. So I try to read most donations within like 15, 20 minutes. Just letting you know we have had more donations and I will be reading them. But it carries on. European Commission on Tuesday approved the next 21 billion of a 200 billion EU pandemic recovery fund earmarked for Italy. That's why she can't be anti all this stuff. Future tranches are contingent on continuing structural reforms which the country needs to grow. The European Central Bank's new board bond buying program would equally come with strings attached. Meloni has so far struck a moderate tone but will be instinctively nationalist, and statist government really have the appetite for such reforms. Her choice of finance minister will be pivotal. The hope must be that she chooses a competent technocrat who can work with Brussels.
They're actually just using that word. Yeah. They've just owned it. They've taken the slur we have used against them for years, and now they own it. Wait until they start calling themselves the elites.
There are reasons not to panic. Indeed, the financial market's reaction has largely been a shrug. The coalition's win, though decisive, was far below the two-thirds majority required to change the constitution without a referendum. Italy's checks and balances in the shape of the presidency and the constitutional court seem safe for now. The EU can take some comfort, scant as it is, that things could be much worse. Meloni's Atlanticism and strong support for Ukraine makes her premiership easier for Brussels. Again, she's fully on board with the gay. But Salvini and Berlusconi remain Kremlin apologists. Ooh. This could be troublesome for Meloni. A spat over Russia's war in Ukraine was one reason Draghi's unity government derailed. Moreover, the dire economic situation gives Meloni little room for radical change, which she seems to sense. Her political fate is tied to that of the economy, and the economy is in the hands of the EU. This is why we talk about economics so much. She need not only look to the UK to see the repercussions of reckless tax cuts in this climate. We'll come to that story later. Italy's new government may be the first since Benito Mussolini to be led by the hard right, but firebrands have served as junior coalition partners without much consequence. For all of Salvini's repugnant invasive against migrants, he was unable to change much as interior minister. As a Meloni-led government may seem objectionable to many, but she has proved electable. Now she must show she can govern. So that's, again, we have just kind of read that, which I don't always like doing. Because it's, you know, I don't want to be just the article reader with the beanie
It is kind of like telling, though, because when you combo this with, you've got a tweet of a White House press thing about it. You folks, you know, and they go, these are they doing like the White House memos now directly include Joe Biden's babbling? Well, yeah, folks, you know, and I mean this sincerely, you're going to think this is a little bit out of whack what I'm going to talk about, but you know, democracy is at stake. Yeah, but like, you know, democracy is at stake, man. Literally, there's...
They probably bridged that from some horrible ramble that was even worse.
Yeah, literally, there's a case being made around the world, not just here, because democracy and autocracy... And there's an awful lot of folks who believe that democracies can't be sustained in the 21st century because there's problems are so much is changing in science and technology, the environment, a whole range of things. That it's awful hard to reach a consensus in the short amount of time you have to reach. What?
It's so babble. You're right. They're even having to write it as babble because his speech is so like slurred. Oh dear! But no, the
I can't even read the rest of that. It's making my brain come out my ears.
But basically, he's saying that events in Italy are proof that democracy is at stake. Blah blah blah. Democracy. Blah blah blah. Government. Blah blah blah. Freedom. All that stuff. It's linking in, and again, it's promoting the idea that mild, compromised, focused center-right governments are in some way a threat to global democracy. And you see how the ratchet gets turned, the dialectic gets changed, yada yada yada. We've talked about it before, about how what is acceptable in a nationalist direction or a right with direction or a traditionalist direction is slowly throttled when you get people like Trump or Meloni who are posited as like the hardest of the hard right, when really they have extremely palatable policies and are able to effectively be folded into
the sentence in the middle here. And so that's why I have these constant arguments. So I've met with Xi Jinping over 78 hours, 68 of which are in person, over the last 10 years. And then I'm going to presume this is word for word from Joe Biden. And he makes the case straight up that democracies can't be sustained in the 21st century. Just imagine like Xi Jinping sort of like slamming a Coors Light and be like, yeah, straight up, democracies can't be sustained, man.
Straight up, Joey dude, I'm going to level with you, man. No cap. Straight up, dude, straight up. Democracies, man. It ain't going to be sustained in this 21st century.
Democracies be falling off. No cap, for real,
yeah,
for real.
No cap. I'm telling you, I'm sorry, man. I love you. You know, Joey, my brother, and I love you, but democracies are mid. And Joe's just like,
I notice you've got another one here about Matteo Salvini.
This is about Salvini, and Salvini... tried to do very minimal things about the migrant crisis in Italy.
Well, don't tell me. They painted him as the next Hitler, and he wasn't one.
No, but God what forbid. Happened was he, in line with Italian policy at the time, basically, they set policy and tried to enforce policy. And because they set policy and tried to enforce policy, the legal structure in Italy completely, one, hamstrung them, two, took them, I think Salvini's still facing other cases about this, because they attempted to take him to court about seven different times about this, about two migrant ships that he turned away. These NGO ships that pick up people 5 meters from the Tripoli coast and from all of these places in Libya and essentially function as people smuggling operations.
God, yeah, I just noticed at the bottom of this here, just having a brief look, I'd forgotten about this at the time, but they were essentially trying to do him for kidnapping.
Yes.
For seeing that he didn't want this boat arriving on the shores of his country that he was a leader of. He's now a kidnapper. Well,
he was the interior minister. Mm. And he was the Minister of the Interior. He was in charge of setting and enforcing immigration policy. And he turned away the Open Arms Rescue Ship, an NGO ship that had 174 people they'd ferried directly from people smugglers in the Mediterranean Sea. Mm-hmm. And there was another ship. There was two ships that he refused to let dock in Italy that were full of illegal immigrants. And they were just going to fire hose them into the country. And it ended up as a massive long-running legal drama in which he was taken to court. In fact, the judge said he has to face trial, or said he had to face trial back in 2021. I'm not sure if this has been resolved yet. I don't think it has. I can't seem to find much on it anymore. He's also under investigation for another smaller migrant stand-up involving the Italian Coast Guard ship, Girotoni, which Salvini refused to allow to dock in the summer of 2019. The prosecution in that case, Andrea... what an Italian name, advised against the trial, arguing that Salvini was carrying out government policy when he kept the 160 migrants at sea for 5 days. And yeah, his argument was basically just they can dock anywhere but not here. Like, go away. It's amazing. This is happens when you have something as basic as saying, we will not allow ships crammed full of illegal immigrants to dock in Italian ports.
Well, no, it's essentially an attempt to set a precedent that there is no legal precedent that says you can't, or that you can turn migrants away. You know, that not only now is there, you know, that you had this sort of UN stuff years ago where it's like, oh, well, if you're this charity or you're this government, the next thing is your duty to help these people get to the nearest safe port or whatever they called it. And now it's just gone to the realms of, yeah, when brown people turn up on your shore in a dinghy, you legally have to take them, otherwise you're Hitler.
Well, that's the state we're at, and that's why all of this stuff is, under the current framework, is impossible to stop in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it is set from a legal level, it's set from, again, the NGOs have a lot of power, there's a huge power structure that is made for preventing anyone interfering with this program.
Well, yeah, and I was going to say, Rob's mentioned it in chat as well. There was a whole thing in 2018, 2019 with Lauren Southern when she went down there and then was basically made person non grata for just filming what goes on.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is very sort of shut it down. The fact that, never mind the policies or what Matteo Salvini wants to this, that, next thing. You'd like, don't even think you can go around showing people these boats and them arriving on coasts.
No, it's very, again, you get, I know when Nigel Farage went down to try and look at some, he basically got told that was politically unacceptable.
Mm.
And both him and Lauren Southern basically backed down on that.
Yep.
They both backed down on directly showing what was going on, which is expected, to be honest. I know Lauren Southern's tried to reform.
Seeing that now, it does actually make me quite surprised that they are... that they are then willing to show what's happening in the channel, but I wonder if that's then just, it's like, well, there is no opposition to this. We actually don't even care anymore. We're just going to go full mask off and just, like, humiliate you by showing you this stuff every other day.
Basically, yeah. I think what they did was they smashed it so heavily and they made it so unacceptable to criticise it. They're trying to turn the crisis into from the humanitarian angle. essentially trying to get out ahead of it, because it is so severe and there's so much of it. And you see just like abandoned boats on the Kent coast. You see people like shambling around the coastline. It's like shocking to people. People don't think this can happen, don't think this could happen, and they're a lot of people are just blindsided by it. I think it's just got so bad they can't deny it's happening, so they have to put an angle on it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, there's no structure, especially legally in terms of the courts here, that would allow you to oppose it. I mean, look at just the criticism of the Aaron Ali from Nigel Farage. He got chewed out so heavily. That was it's a very good sign of who is in charge. The Aaron Ali is a sacred part of the British establishment. You know, they're heroes. You can't criticize them. And they're really just a giant people smuggling service now. They spend, I think, the majority of their budget these days ferrying migrants around.
Well, yeah, no, there's some of the channels on Telegram that document it are actually pretty good. And they will show you the sort of the same thing you get with like a plane scanner or like flight scanner or whatever it is. You can do the same with the channel. And there will be upwards of half a dozen boats from the RNLI, from the Open, what's the George Soros one called? I can't remember it.
The Open Society Foundation.
The Open Society Foundation, I believe, has a boat they support that's out in the water. There is like a UN one. There's like another UNICEF one. And, you know, that there is essentially tens of millions of pounds worth of marine equipment and well-trained people just floating about the channel waiting to pick up migrants from France every day.
It's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things, once you really describe it, you kind of like having the other words really to add on, because it's just, you know, if you aren't sort of driven to some level of anger by that on its own, then there's no getting to you. But anyway, speaking of troubled waters.
Oh, yes. I'll actually open this with a couple of donations here. There's two here from Glowy, $3 ones, two $3 donations. He said, did you hear? Russia blew up their own pipeline that they control. Strange, really, giving up the leverage like that. Why would they want to give NATO what it wants? I'm detecting some sarcasm from you there.
No.
And he says, the Free Speech Union can only play, but yeah, in the playpen. This is just false opposition. Only liberals can use institutions to attack people, but you must uphold liberalism with compliance and forgive transgressions against you. Yep, that's really what they said. It's just liberalism is when you lose. The harder you lose, the more liberal you are.
Yeah, but this is one you caught from Forbes. If you look at the article we're about to look at in its most current form, the headline is NATO says sabotage behind destruction of natural gas pipelines. Just sabotage, no one really did it, maybe it was an accident. Oh no, actually what they wrote, I think maybe hours before, because the other one seems to be archived from roughly the same time, it's actually US blew up Russian gas pipelines, Nord Stream 1 and 2, says former Polish defense minister.
These are the same articles, by the way.
Yeah.
They have just completely edited this. They memory hold their original article. Complete with the tweet from the verified account of this former Polish defense minister, in which he thanks the US for doing this. He follows it up.
It's nice that the archived version of the article still has the tweet.
Yes. Well, we've got the archived version of the tweet as well, because the tweet itself has been deleted too. But it's everybody, and I mean everybody, even the people on the left, even the establishment people, even the media people, even the likes of Forbes, know America did this. There is nobody earnestly saying they didn't. I mean, the narrative is now coming that, oh, NATO is shaking its fist and it's got to have fake indignation at the Russians. And
the tweet before, the tweet that comes after, you know, based, we're told nowadays, but based Poland, anti-pause Poland, this, that, and the next thing. You know, Russian propaganda instantly launched a smear campaign against Poland, the US and Ukraine, accusing the West of aggression against Nord Stream 1 and 2, blah, 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 blah. Authenticating the Russian lies at this particular moment jeopardizes the security of Poland. What an act of gross irresponsibility. So there's their, you know, misinformation unit kicking in.
Yeah. They're like, no, this Polish defense minister doesn't know what he's talking about. It was really dirty to the Russians. They did something that doesn't make any sense.
And then there's the great bit, which I think we actually have the video for as well, which we can get to, where Joe Biden's, you know, if Russia invades, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
Yeah, and the reporter asks, but how will you do that exactly, since the project is in Germany's control? Biden says, I promise you, we will be able to do that.
Yeah.
Just play the clip, because the journalist's tone is just like, it's a pretty good one.
God, he's so quiet and mumbly.
Germany, if Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again. Then
again,
there will be no longer Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly? Since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control.
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
What's with a wry smile? I don't like it. He literally pulls on like a wry smile after he says it.
Trust me.
It is him, and he is only competent when he's like four-star military general Joe Biden.
Yes.
The only time he can speak anywhere near sort of straight is when it involves using Russia as a conduit to attack Europe.
It's the only thing he seems to be able to be honest about in his weird adult state.
Yeah, it was funny as well in that one, because you get the reporter asking the questions, like she's like genuinely like stunned.
Yeah.
So what? This is, even for crazy old Joe, this is a bit much. This isn't what we expected from him.
But again, what is NATO going to do? I mean, NATO's come out and said that this is sabotage. They're starting to do the reflex of, shit, we're going to have to, in some way, blame Russia for this.
Mm.
But originally, the Nordic nations, Germany, were all just stunned. They were like, it's been blown up, and yeah, we're not. It's very telling that the Russians weren't immediately blamed. They had this weird stunned period where they said, we've detected explosions, this is not accidental, this is sabotage. They put out very, very general statements that actually in no way mentioned Russia. And now NATO has had to change footing. It's had to force Forbes to delete its article. And it now says, NATO says sabotage behind destruction of natural gas pipelines. It no longer brings up the tweets, apart from in the archive, you know, in the disinformation sense, that the Polish tweet's been deleted. You know, it's something he followed up and basically said, all Ukrainian Baltic Sea states have opposed Nord Stream's construction for 20 years. Now, 20 billion of scrap metal lies at the bottom of the sea, another cost to Russia of its criminal decision to invade Ukraine. It's very clear what he's saying. He like triple downs on it.
Mm.
And there's been a few basically wink and nod admissions. There's another one here that we've got from 2014 from Condoleezza Rice, arch neocon.
Is this from a tweet? Yes, there we go. Shall I play this clip as well then?
Yeah, we'll just get the clips out of the way first, then we can read some of the media stuff. Sorry, I've gone a bit out of order here. I've realized that we've got it, and it's probably a bit wrong.
Do you think Germany's been as aggressive?
This clip here, yes.
I'm quite an admirer of Chancellor Merkel, and I heard her statement when she was with President Obama in Washington. I thought it was a very good statement. But now we need to have tougher sanctions, and I'm afraid at some point this is going to probably have to involve oil and gas. The Russian economy is vulnerable. 80% of Russian exports are in oil, gas, and minerals. People say, well, the Europeans will run out of energy. Well, the Russians will run out of cash before the Europeans run out of energy. And I understand that it's uncomfortable to have an effect on business ties in this way. But this is one of the few instruments that we have. Over the long run, you simply want to change the structure of energy dependence. You want to depend more on the North American energy platform, the tremendous bounty of oil and gas that we're finding in North America.
Anyway, general point of that one understood. What have I done? Like something else, but I've just got the BBC one up or something to put on the screen. But, you know, you look at, and as we've read and shown people on stream, I would hope, that there was an immense amount of planning that went into the Arab Spring.
Yes.
Literally decades and decades of you know, four-star general, this secretary of state, that secretary of defense, this, you know, homeland security, that, having meetings and quite publicly talking about the fact that, yeah, we're gonna roll up to the Middle East, we're gonna collapse Tunisia, we're gonna collapse Libya, we're gonna collapse Syria, and we're basically gonna turn it into a big crescent through which we can vent power, sort of an assault method over Europe.
Yes, and we're going to damage Russia by having oil and gas come from Libya, pipelines through Syria. We're going to create all of this mess, and then through it, we're going to swoop in and become the default infrastructure. And these are going to become U.S. vassal states, even more so than they were previously.
Yeah.
We've talked about the Syrian dentist.
She goes on to say the fact that, like, the Russians will run out of cash before the Europeans run out of energy. We'll make sure of this. It's like, last time you made assurances to the people of Europe in regards to their enemies, quote-unquote, that didn't go so well.
What happens if Russia doesn't run out of will?
You know, what happens if they do what they've already done, which is essentially stop gas and energy getting into Europe? That's technically not even Russian, but is just on a Russian boat that actually has no real link. You know, it'll port up in some place in the Middle East or in the Far East and then come to Europe with gas and oil and stuff like that on it. You know, Russia almost has no involvement in that other than the technical ownership of the ship itself.
It's very clear from this as well that what I've said before, this really is meant for the domestic policy in Europe and America.
Mm.
The idea that this really is some grand strategy stuff and that they genuinely see Russia as a hegemonic threat, I don't see that as vital as what they see with how they're going to deal with their own populations. Because every time we see this, it's always to do with the domestic audience. It's always to do with power at home rather than just power abroad. There is no, despite all the supply lines and despite all the equipment supplying, all the financial support, there is actually no direct involvement, really, in Ukraine from Western forces. They don't actually care if they lose. It's all about creating the mess.
Mike Fullwood, a senior research fellow at the independent Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, told the BBC sabotage was, indeed, the most likely cause of the leaks. To rupture an offshore pipeline is a rare occurrence, so 3 in 18 hours would be a big coincidence. If the sabotage was indeed committed by Russia, this was a bizarre move, he said, as it had already shut supplies off. And this is the thing as well, that, like, you know, not only are they playing this, you know, Russia blew up, sabotaged their own pipeline, it's like, well, why would they? They've got the switch in bloody Moscow to turn the thing off at the source.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And the very fact that it would be posited as a possibility is an insult to your intelligence.
Mm.
They know what they did. You know what they did. They've even said what they did, but they have to performatively show you that they can. That's why this is why pointing out the hypocrisy and pointing out the contradiction does nothing.
Yeah.
Because it is actually a demonstration of power. By doing this, the Americans are demonstrating, one, that if Europe doesn't comply, it will be destroyed. And two, that they can go around, they can destroy what they want, they can undertake what they want, they can lie about it to your face, and they think it's funny, basically.
Well, no, it's, you know, if we've looked at the wider conflict and even the political struggles in Ukraine, going all the way back to 2014 and even earlier, I think most of us would be in agreement that Putin has probably had the primary sort of goal of de-escalation. He does not want to go to war with America and Europe. It's just not going to go well. And that's very obvious. And even his mobilization the other week. And now I'm no expert on it, and I've not been up and scratch on it as some folk are, but it would seem to me that his mobilization was in a lot of ways a mobilization in name only. And that really things are just gonna stay as they have been for the last few months. He is basically just doing what needs to be done rhetorically to not look like he's weak. And I think that's the fine line he's playing with. So to think that he would then escalate this situation by, you know, not even antagonizing America, who's the key player here, but by actually antagonizing the European nations that really he needs to win some sympathy over from directly in this manner. And then, you know, not even necessarily threatening that they'll turn the gas off, that blowing the pipe up and then meaning that the lines are out of, you know, use for 6 months, a year, whatever it takes. Because when the guy in this article says 3 to 6 months, I don't believe that for a minute. So, he's getting rid of his bargaining chips. He's being a dick about it when he doesn't need to. Yeah, I'm sure this was Putin.
It's funny that there's the implication here. If you read, there's other articles here. There's an Irish Examiner article here. I believe there's an article here from Sky News. And they all say, there's the Sky News one, is damage to Nord Stream undersea pipelines for sabotage. Top EU diplomat says and warns of retaliation. Statement by, there's EU chief vows retaliation if gas pipeline damage was sabotage. The thing is, the EU officials don't directly name Russia in any of this, even at this late stage. There's the NATO's come out and done some chest beating and they're the only people who've explicitly said this was Russia.
Mm.
But the EU has come out and just expressed, you know, the performative anger that they need to. But all these articles, they use the Russian denial as evidence. They say, well, Russia has denied it. You know, the implication is that Russia did it through saying that Russia denied doing it. They're not saying that the United States didn't even deny doing it.
No.
They basically just said, this wouldn't really benefit anybody. When they know it would benefit them. They haven't actually denied it properly.
Here's America weighing in on this, though, all the way back in February. You've got the statement from Biden. Since Russia has been deploying troops to the Ukrainian border, this would be, a week after that ABC one we watched as well? Our allies and partners deliver a strong, unified response. As I said, while I met with Chancellor Schultz earlier this month, Germany has been a leader in that effort, and we've closely coordinated our efforts to stop the Nord Stream 2 pipeline if Russia further invaded Ukraine. Yesterday, after further close consultations between our two governments, Germany announced that it would halt certification on the pipeline. Yes, consultations between our two governments. Is that what you called everything after 1945 too?
Well, that's the big thing about Nord Stream 2, and it's been effectively finished for many years.
Mm.
But the certification process has been consistently held up by the United States, applying pressure on Germany not to certify their end of it. Mm. Basically, it's a functioning pipeline. All it needs is its certifications. And those have not been forthcoming. There's a donation here before you quickly move on to from Coney. Coney Current Year. Was worried the thumbnail would attract the Yogscast audience. I'm not sure they'd be able to properly interface with our content. They might fall off their racing gamer chairs that have given them horrendous lumbar issues. they would probably the Redditor would probably explode, their fedoras would pop off and they would die. So I think we should put a health warning on these, that it is not compatible with Reddit brain.
Not suitable for Redditoids and Parasoids or any of that ilk.
Yes, the last article here
The Reuters.
From Reuters.
Yeah.
And it's very funny because it's very outward, the implication here again. It's just them going, nice pipeline, shame if something would have happened to it. It says, CIA warned Berlin about possible attacks on gas pipeline in summer.
The source, of course, being Der Spiegel, an organization left after the German unification that used to be basically staffed by the Stasi.
Yes, Der Spiegel, like a lot of the German government, used to be part of the Stasi, or an outlet of the Stasi. Yeah, the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency had weeks ago warned Germany about a possible attack on gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea. German magazine Spiegel said on Tuesday, after leaks in Russian pipelines to Germany were reported. The German government received an CIA tip in summer, Spiegel reported, citing unnamed sources, adding Berlin assumed a targeted attack on Nord Stream 1 and 2. I've saw other articles about this, and they all say basically the CIA didn't say any location, they didn't say any, they just basically said, by the way, your Nord pipeline is going to get attacked.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking
we have no other details.
Yeah, I'm thinking as well in terms of CIA antics, there is another color revolution being attempted in Iran at the moment as well, which I'm sure is completely unrelated to the assaults on Europe via Russia. I'm sure that at no point will these agendas coincide in some sort of bizarre neocon plot.
what we'll see really is everyone knows that the Americans did this, but in 20 years' time, it will be recorded as this transgressive Russian nonsensical attack of pure brutality against the European energy infrastructure.
Mm.
And this will be used as an excuse for escalation, even though everybody knows who did it.
Yes.
I'm quite amazed by the amount of people, even in circles I wouldn't expect, to go, yeah, this was definitely America. nobody's buying this.
As you said earlier on, though, it's proof positive of something that we have been seeing for a while. I know there's a current ongoing hot debate about America and the global American empire, whatever people want to call it. I'll refer to it as the Great Satan, I think, because I've been doing that for a while.
Inshallah.
But, you know, we have on numerous different streams covered subjects whereby you can clearly see that, as you said, America basically shows up to your house party, wipes its arse in your curtains, and says, that's my fucking bed now, get out my house.
Yes.
It's like, there is absolutely no way whatsoever that these elites that are carrying out this stuff could ever be held accountable. You know, they are the highest level of sovereignty. When,
as we've gone through in quite a lot of detail in our democratization streams, America has always hated Europe.
Well,
America has always despised the traditional Europe.
It is not that America hates Europe. It is that a certain subset of people painting themselves as American elites hate Europe.
Well, that's what I mean. Okay, the American power structure, the American elite hate Europe. And Woodrow Wilson is a perfect example of that, with his redrawing of European borders in the wake of World War I to create these imagined nation states that were these horrendous ethnic strife hotspots for 70 years. It's quite amazing how much loathing and how much like practical destruction is wrought on Europe by America in the 20th century and now in the 21st century. They are. America is a Europe's kind of eternal enemy. It's really that simple in terms of the way that foreign policy is exercised, and obviously foreign policy is set by the American elite. So yeah, it's not, a lot of people get very upset and they think we're talking about, you know, the American populace, but we're not people who believe in mass will as governance. We don't believe that the governance of a country comes from the collective will of its people. We think that's retarded. So again, I need to finish it. I'm working on an article which is called Political Noncombatants, about basically how Carl Schmitt is a great argument against violence, which is funny, but it is. It's a great article. It's a great argument against not punishing populations in the way that Germany and Japan were punished.
Yes,
it's actually an incredible excoriation of total war if you read into it properly, and how it interfaces with where you lie blame in terms of the actions of elites. But I need to, that's been in the works for so long, I need to finish that. But there is a great framework there. So when we say that, we mean the American power structure. We don't mean, you know, the average Walmart dwelling American.
Yeah, and then in other news, the IMF has basically declared Britain in a state of like financial freefall, which it has been for years at this point. It's just the fact that we're now finally getting to the point where large institutions go, no, yeah, that stuff that all the conspiracy theorists have been saying for a few years, it's all true. Yeah, no, it's collapsing.
Well, the whole thing is that the IMF had no qualms about the record borrowing in like wartime level borrowing that they did during the COVID pandemic. That's fine. That is responsible economic policy because
it's the tax cuts. It's the one pence they want to take off the 50% tax rate. That's what's going to kill us.
Yeah, what's going to kill us is not the, what is it? What was the borrowing during the pandemic?
As in the total amount or?
Yeah, I'm trying to have a look at it.
I don't think anyone kept a tally of that one.
It's ridiculous, but it's hundreds of billions.
Here we go. Not only did the world's most important international financial institution suggest that the plan was economically risky, it said it was likely to increase inequality and recommended taking an early opportunity for a re-evaluation of the policies in the coming weeks. See, that's the I know, again, we talk about economics so much that it almost feels trite, but this sort of attitude that you plan and manage the economy is such a given nowadays in the average person's psyche that they don't even see a problem with, you know, the government coming up with a new economic central plan every other week. If anything, to them, that's a good thing.
No, there's a whole bunch of, like, I don't know who these people are, these New Economic Foundation people, but they just point out reality in that the government's debt during the pandemic was bought up by the Bank of England. Mm. It was bought up 99.9% of it was bought up with QE.
Well, they're already engaging in a new policy anyway for this. After what the IMF has said, they're now engaging in another bond buying program, which basically means, yes, every single bond in the UK will probably be owned by the UK government, the institute that's meant to issue them and make a profit from selling them on.
There was supposed to be a bond selling initiative after basically this massive transfer of fiduciary media into the hands of the state that issues it, as is shown that all of the government borrowing, in quotes, was done with QE. And it was borrowing that, you know, it's amazing that all this fiduciary media gets created and he's bought with printed money to get double whammy inflation.
Well, yeah.
Yet that's never factored into the narrative.
Well, you've also got to remember the fact as well that the Bank of England now owns this £413 billion worth of debt, which means, in theory, they pay interest on that. Or at least someone does.
Well, there's all these quangos as well. There's the NGO, not the NGO, so there's the independent body, which is the Office for Fiscal Responsibility, issued like a red warning or something like the equivalent of it against this. Basically what happens is if you have a politician like Theresa May who is trying to clothe herself as Thatcher cosplay, and she makes what are essentially mild tax cuts. They are like 5% here, 3% there. These are not like massive tax cuts. She has not like abolished income tax. She has abolished the 5p off the top rate of tax. So now you pay 40% on earnings over 50,000 instead of 45%.
I do like the fiscal rules lack bite and consistently fail to hold chancellors and the Treasury to account on their own terms. In just over a decade, the UK will have experienced 6 different sets of rules, with 11 rules coming in the past 7 years. Chancellors are effectively setting and then marking their own homework. so true.
What they're saying is, oh, they shouldn't set a mark of the homework. An international, a neutral international body should do that. We need to take this out of the hands of politicians is what a lot of this is. Unfortunately, what they do is, if you look at the article there, they say, well, we need independent bodies. We need more Democrats.
However, I have to admit, I didn't even think it worth mentioning because we know what neutrality means in this sphere.
Oh, yeah.
Good chat here from Glow in the Dark as well. I think the globalists in America are ramping up effort to dominate the world now because they are worried new elites might try to replace them, or they're seeing the wheels are coming off. I don't think they are trying to dominate the world. They are trying to remind everyone how dominant they already are.
Yes. Global hegemony really took place in 1945.
Mm. But even further on than that, though, but just in the sense of, you know, that they don't have to dominate anymore because they've already captured basically everything.
The IMF here in the Sky News article is acting in a very political manner, which is not supposed to do, but here we go. IMF warns UK against mini-budget that will likely increase inequality. Surely the IMF is all about the viability of macroeconomics, whether or not a country can meet its financial obligations. Why is the IMF commenting on inequality? Why is it essentially saying that this has been that wasn't very progressive of you, Liz Truss?
Well, this is a strong sort of addition to AA's idea of the octopus that he talked about at Witan and elsewhere. Because what he's trying to say is that the money power is really one of the key drivers. And for the fact that, as described by Faisal Islam of the BBC, the most important financial institution in the world has set its top priority as equality.
Yes. I guess the quote here is amazing. They say, given elevated inflation pressures in many countries, including the UK, we do not recommend large and untargeted fiscal packages at this juncture. So the IMF is essentially saying that they will set domestic policy in any country that they can comment on it, if possible.
Yes.
It is important that the fiscal policy does not work at cross purposes to monetary policy. It's saying that that if you reverse engineer this, they're saying that fiscal policy needs to be medium sized and quote unquote targeted. Basically, you have to give money to these specific interest groups, these specific causes, and
Isn't the Bank of England supposed to be a non-governmental and independent institution? Of course, its policies might conflict with that of the government because, in theory, the Bank of England is not subservient to the government. Now, whether or not that's the case is obviously a completely different question. But again, it's this sort of like playing up to this idea that, oh, it's these different independent institutions and they just refuse to get on. It's like, well, maybe if you've got 85 IQ, you could believe that, but I don't.
No. Well, there's a whole thing as well. I don't have the article here because we don't want to be reading too many of these articles. But there's an article that very accurately described what the Bank of England is doing versus what the government is doing as applying the accelerator and the brake at the same time.
Yes.
Because that's what's being done. That you are raising interest rates, but also lowering taxes without lowering spending. One is a stimulus and one is supposed to be a control. So you have control on the one hand to fight inflation and stimulus on the other hand that will fuel inflation or fuel spending.
Have they got a picture of them? Because we need to... Oh, they don't even have a picture. Oh, no, they do. They mention them at least. Because we have to remember that big Kwasi Kwarteng, his hedge fund that he used to work for made hundreds of millions of pounds as the pound went into free fall after he announced his mini budget.
Funny
nothing to see there. Just our own elites shorting and deconstructing our own economy.
Well, they make money either way. That's the big thing.
If they
have any kind of information about how the economy will run, if they have any information about the decisions that we made in future, they are able to profit greatly off it. Even if they, you know, we can't accuse him of insider trading because we'll get sued. But it looks like possible. You know, if insider trading took place, that's what it would look like. is all I would say. Because there are people who have these conversations, even in an informal manner, and they can tell from their proximity to the halls of power what decisions will and won't be made and how they will be made. Mm-hmm. So they have an inbuilt advantage. And yes, it's always disgusting when they make money from shorting the pound. But George Soros showed that that is something that elites are almost expected to do now. They're expected to have no regard because, as we'll move on to here, none of these people are British. None of the people involved in this process.
Should we go for that one first then? Because I have to admit, I do find it funny.
Yeah.
The Labour MP Rupa Hook suspended and apologises after calling Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng superficially black.
So we have Rupa Hook, who I believe is Indian or Pakistani. She's an Indo.
What, you mean she's... You mean she's foreign descent? I thought brown people couldn't be racist, but clearly... Indo-Pak isn't as far down the oppression ladder as whatever Kwasi Kwarteng is.
I believe the term is groid, but avoid the groid, he ruins nations. Oh dear. But here we have an Indo-Pak Labour MP calling a possibly Afro-Caribbean, I'm not quite sure.
Well, see, this is just obviously an example of the anti-Indo-Pak bias that the governments of the West have, because Joe Biden can say you ain't black, he can call you superficially black, but an Indian woman can't say it. Come on, guys.
Yeah. What happened to the girl bosses?
Yeah.
So we have here an international monetary body criticizing the budget of a Kwasi Kwarteng chancellor who has been called superficially black by Rupa Hook. And this is supposed to be British politics.
I'm just going to go to the end here. Well, they've got the subtitle, "You wouldn't know he is black." An audio posted online by the Guido Fox website, Miss Huck says of Mr. Kwarteng, "Superficially, he is a black man. He went to Eton, I think. He went to a very expensive prep school, all the way through the top schools in the country. If you hear him on the Today programme, you wouldn't know he is black."
Yeah, he's... Well, it's very much the idea that these people need to be cucking and jiving. It's this, of course, this narrative is meant to enforce the Democrats, the Labour, the real racist guys. No, you idiots, we are.
God, David Lammy had something to say on him, I'm sure he had there. God, I didn't realise how long this article was this way.
Yeah, it's quite long. It's got also, it's really badly formatted as well.
Also, speaking to the broadcaster, Miss Angela Rayner said, "She can't apologize for no comment." That's for one for anyone who seriously follows British politics. And we'll move on before we get bloody, as if we just made a joke about Harvey Price.
Oh, dear. No, I will just say this is, like, it's civic nationalism writ large. It's, oh, no, he's a technocrat. He's not really, you know, you can't be black. And it's such a, again, that dialectic itself is so false.
I'm just loving it in chat. She said he hasn't even stolen a bike. He needs to rob a corner shop and do crack first. He hasn't even abandoned a child. You ain't black.
Well, why isn't he living up to his demographics properly?
Anyway, in other news, if you are preparing for a hurricane or tropical storm, it is vital that you follow the CDC's information on COVID-19 whilst you do it.
Yeah,
preparing for a hurricane, point one, stay up to date on your COVID-19 vaccines. COVID-19 vaccines help protect you from getting sick or severely ill with COVID-19. Staying up to date on vaccines makes it less likely you'll be sick with COVID-19 while sheltering or evacuating from a hurricane, and less likely to need medical services while hospitals are under strain from the natural disaster.
I'm actually making a meme right now that we'll hopefully have up before the before we have the end of this. It's so in line with this meme. I just have to make it.
Are you doing a stone toss?
Yes, I'm afraid I am.
Let's look at our new hurricane survival plan. What does this have to do with hurricanes? Hurricanes. Oh God! Yeah, if you need to evacuate, prepare a go kit with personal items you cannot do without during an emergency. Include items that can help protect you and others from COVID-19, such as hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol, so you can get blasted in the shelter. Bar or liquid soap, disinfectant wipes, and multiple clean masks for everyone aged 2 or older.
Jeez, oh, just.
How can he be black? He doesn't even have AIDS.
I am poor.
Yeah, this is one of the bits you had gone through as well. Does either household or staying with family or friends or family, does either household have someone at high risk of COVID? Consider taking a rapid COVID-19 test. Ventilate the home to the extent you can. If you have power, you can use fans and portable HEPA air cleaners and run your HVAC continuously. After the storm passes, it is safe to do so. You can open windows and doors. Follow everyday preventative actions, including coughs and sneezes, washing your hands often, and avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. What if the hurricane ruins the running water, the clean running water in your community? Because you live in Florida and you live in a swamp. At what point then do you, maybe that's why you carry the alcohol sanitizer gel all the time.
Possibly. It's just so dumb. It's so, all of it is about COVID-19. Mm. Staying safe after a hurricane. The COVID-19 community level. Steps to prevent carbon monoxide poisoning. Basically, there are 3 points here for every 1 point that is not COVID related. So what you have is the CDC, they don't talk about dirty running water, they don't talk about any other health risks during a hurricane, they don't talk about you know, the effects of hypothermia on elderly people. Just the, they don't talk about staying warm.
I'm coming to the last point here. Dealing with disasters can cause stress and strong emotions, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic. It is natural to feel anxiety, grief, and worry. Coping with these feelings and getting help when you need it will help you, your family, and your community recover. The therapeutic state has many, many arms. Even when it is dealing with a hurricane or a tropical storm, it must have the institutionalized care workers there to make sure that you aren't feeling too sad about natural disasters.
Is this hurricane that has destroyed your house making you anxious? I'm afraid this formatting doesn't actually go very well with the stone toss meme, but you can imagine it. It's a very obvious one. What does this have to do with hurricanes? Hurricanes.
Anyway, to get to the last and final global disaster that hopefully kills us all and collapses Western society. COVID-like virus lurking in bats deep in Russian caves could jump to humans, virologists warn, and it's completely resistant to vaccines.
Oh no. Again, Daily Mail, a lot of the supposedly quote-unquote right-wing press are like this. It's very geared towards scared old people and scaring them even more.
Oh, look, we've officially got a cause of death for the Queen. It was old age.
Really?
don't miss. Queen's death certificate reveals how royals raced in vain to be by her side. Monarch died of old age.
I'm very surprised that they didn't do the whole...
God, they really are COVID just thing. Like turning the whole royal family into like a new set of celebrities again, aren't they?
Yes. Well, again, this is what the average quote-unquote centre-right person in Britain is supposed to be preoccupied with.
Yeah. Russian government-affiliated experts only acknowledged Costa 2 last May, yet never-before-seen pathogen was detected in bats swabbed in early 2020. Why didn't they tell us about this variant when the first virus was around? Why would the elites do this?
I mean, the Daily Mail is supposed to be this like right wing hate vertical, but it has puff pieces about the royals and Kaylee Jenner's tits or whoever she is.
Yeah.
And bat viruses from Russia, and it's just, it is pure.
There we go. We have been officially censored. Russell Brand leaves YouTube in favor of Rumble after one of his COVID videos is taken. it's all too much. Yeah, what else we got here? Dr. Stephanie Seifert and colleagues also experimented on Costa 1. Oh, so they just admit that they experiment on these viruses now. Tests showed Costa 2 was able to infect human cells in a near identical fashion as SARS-CoV-2. Using a spike-like protein on its surface, the virus hooks onto an entry enzyme found on the exterior of human cells called ACE2. Oh, so this cold virus gives you AIDS too.
It's also tiresome, but also predictable.
Amazing that... Right, I've had enough, quite frankly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure to put this up on the screen. Make sure to take note for anyone who didn't hear it at the start of the stream, because right about this time tomorrow evening, we will have our speaker interview with Millennial Woes going up, who's going to be one of our speakers at Nomos, which I'm quite excited to
be there for.
I noticed someone in the Telegram when I posted earlier on was like, what the fuck? How have you done this?
we do be knowing people, though.
Mm.
God, to wrap up though as well, but yes, do go watch that. It is going to be premiering tomorrow. If you guys want to make a bookmark, we do have Millennial Worlds who'll be speaking.
I would also maybe make sure to think of picking up tickets soon. I know I've said
there's going to be a big buy. Well,
not just that, there was quite a big rush on Monday when we mentioned AA as well. So
yeah,
we will be going. They will be going fast, so make sure to get yours before they're gone. I've just noticed Goybin you in chat. It's a cost of living crisis, innit?
Ugh, good lord. I think I missed one from Glowy here. He said, we should notice what happens if you go against the globalists in the West. You get sued and charged with everything under the sun to tie you up in court, making the person ineffective against them. Yep, lawfare. It's people kept trying to talk about. I don't want to talk badly of people, but I've tried to raise this issue multiple times with multiple people with larger platforms, and they've just kind of shrugged at me, which has been a bit depressing.
What do you mean you want to take effective action? You're a Nazi.
Yeah.
No, you obviously you obviously want to engage in anti-politics and shorten the distance between you and violence for anyone that anyone that knows what that's from.
Yeah, well, I did do a stream about that on Uzlu's channel. It's the first time I've mentioned him in here in a while. Although he is so unpersoned, he can't keep his videos up on YouTube, so I don't know if that's even his odyssey or not.
Yeah.
Poor guy has to creep around like he basically is Alex Jones, but that's the cost of, you know, not tempering what you say, you know, even the relatively middle of the road stuff, honestly, that sometimes he comes out with. All of these, though, to link them all together, are examples of how hegemonic power works and how it's demonstrated, and how it demonstrates the control that they, or, you know, they're not trying to take over, they are already in charge. And the fact that they can go around blowing up Europe's oil pipelines and effectively have people kind of embarrassedly look the other way. The fact that a supposedly Nazi politician or fascist politician can come in to office in Italy, and the Financial Times can be like, "Don't worry, guys, we've rigged it so she can't actually do anything."
I'm sorry. If this tweet is real, I've just noticed that he's put it out. I need to put this on the screen because this is too fucking good.
Please be real. What is it? I can't see it.
Let me send an image into the Discord. Close on this because it's funny as fuck.
Okay, we found something to close on. But yeah, just keep in mind that we are not trying to just flip from one headline to another. We are trying to illustrate a serious point here, that reality as it stands right now very much demonstrates the existence of this, of the politics and policies and push of the elite class and their objectives.
Well, it's not just that as well. When we do the events, when we've spoken at Shieldings, we have made sure to connect these things and these ideas. So we, you know, there is no, as you say, it's flitting from article to article, but there is a constant agenda, as it were, throughout it all. I'm just gonna, we can end on this evening. Lizzo went. This is from Eric Michael someone, who is probably some sort of weird. I'm sure you could go look up the tweet exactly, but. Lizzo went from living in her car to moving to Minnesota, earned her wealth in multiple Grammys, and is a testament to hard work and success, while also expressing a genuine enthusiasm for history. Her story should be seen as an embodiment of conservative ideals. Good night, everyone.
Oh God, he's from The Independent and MSNBC. This is apparently the centrist position on Lizzo. Oh, good Lord.
We don't need to say anything. We just need to say good night.
Good night, everybody.